We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hello and welcome to the Chris Saylor Show. I'm Jerry Price, and I'm joined by Princeton head women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor. Coach, welcome.
Thanks, Jerry. It's great to be here. We haven't been doing many of these this year, so it's nice to get a chance to connect and to share what's going on with the fans of the program.
I know this would be, you know, be in the heart of the season. This would be our weekly thing going, and you know, kind of sad that we're not doing it. But let's, you know, we have a lot to talk about, much more than we would talk about if it was just one game last week and another one coming up this week.
Yeah.
So, you know, let's start at the beginning. You've been doing this for a while. I have to think this is the most challenging thing you've had to deal with as the Princeton women's lacrosse coach. And correct me if I'm wrong, but it just seems like, you know, this is something that came out of nowhere a year ago, and it's really affected everybody involved in college athletics. And, you know, just talk a little bit about what it's been like for you to try to navigate through things that you've never been through before.
Yeah, no question. It's definitely been challenging, and it's been a long stretch. Clearly, none of us had the sense that it was going to still be impacting our team more than a year after it first made its impact. And so it has been difficult in that way, and we've had to adapt and be flexible. But I think all throughout, you know, our theme really has been trying to find silver linings and trying to make the most of, you know, the experience that we have. For a lot of our kids, that meant taking the year off to preserve their eligibility at Princeton and find ways to occupy their time, whether it be getting internships or jobs and learning and growing on a year's leave from the university. And for others, it meant continuing on their path and coming back to Princeton. And right now, those are the kids that we've been focused on since early February, when we started to have practice again. So, you know, it's been in a lot of ways, it's been really fun for our staff. You know, just like it is for the kids, I think the best 2 hours of their day, it's the best 2 hours of our day too, to be able to get out on the field and to coach and to work with the student athletes who want to be there and see them get better each and every day.
So let's start first with the kids who are not there. Mm-hmm. How much contact do you have with them? It's 19 players that decided to take the year off, including the entire senior class. Have you been in contact with them? And do you know, have they been playing? Have they had sticks in their hands?
Yeah, well, we've been in contact with them really since last March, and especially over last spring, summer, fall, and through the winter. And we've done a lot over Zoom with the full group. Most recently, we had a career mentorship series with the men's and women's teams and our alums, which was just fantastic. And we also listened to a program by Jarrett Harper that was a JDEI initiative. And so we've had a lot of discussions regarding social justice and things along those lines. And as coaches, we've kept in touch. We have our, you know, biweekly call list. And so we're keeping in touch with everyone. But yeah, I think we've done a good job keeping in touch with them, but it's been in many ways challenging, I think, because unless you're together, it's hard to play lacrosse and to replicate what we're doing here. And so we had a Zoom a couple of weeks ago to remind the kids who are away that, hey, we've been gone for a year and we've got 5 months until you're back on campus and it's time to really kick your training into high gear. You know, it's time to really start replicating lacrosse movements as much as possible, you know, really elevating the work you're doing with your stick and to try as much as you can to get together and play. So we got a group of kids who are together now, and they've been together for about a month. And I think we have another group that's planning to get together over the summer and live together so they can train together. So, you know, they understand that they have a responsibility and a desire to come back and be as prepared as they can be in the fall.
It's going to be interesting to see what happens next year. You're going to have your largest roster ever. All these kids will be back after not having played essentially in 2 years.
Yeah.
So that'll be pretty interesting to see how that plays out. We'll get into that a year from now. Mm-hmm. Let's talk instead about the spring of 2021. And let's start with the idea there will not be any games for Princeton women's lacrosse in the spring of 2021, correct?
You know, that is correct. Although there may be some spring teams at Princeton who are able to play lacrosse with the timing, you know, we start conference championships start early and then playoffs start early. We're still in phase three. We couldn't even play now if we had the appropriate number of kids. And we just haven't had a consistent number of players more than 10 or 11 at practice. And we just as coaches and as a team didn't think that was, you know, even if we could get to 12 players, think that we would be prepared enough to play a game that's 2 hours, 2.5 hours long against teams that have been practicing with their full roster all year long. We didn't think it was in our best interest. And so we're really focusing on, you know, continuing to improve our skills and our, you know, the understanding, our lax IQ, small game concepts, things like that. And we're making a lot of progress, which is really what we hope to get out of the year.
So let's talk about some of the players that you have with you. You have no seniors. You have two junior captains. Mm-hmm. And I haven't done the math, but you have four juniors. You have a couple of sophomores. You have a few freshmen, and then you borrowed some kids from the club team. So yeah, just talk a little bit about some of the people involved in the program now. And let's start with the two captains.
Yeah, I think it's just been a great experience for Tara Schechter and Lucy Gildehouse to get a chance to be leaders of the team, you know, and to really elevate their voices on the team and to be in, you know, weekly meetings with the coaching staff and to really see what goes on kind of behind the scenes and to just get this chance to really lead this group. I know they've really enjoyed it. They love this role, and I hope they're going to take what they learned this year and, you know, use it and help them be effective leaders of next year's team, too. Even though we have a different set of captains coming in, I think the experience they've gained will really be valuable. And we've looked to those guys for feedback on just about everything that we've done in the program. And we've looked at them to be great examples of what's expected on the field and what it means to be a Princeton lacrosse player. So, you know, I think they've done just a great job for us, along with, you know, the other juniors, Gabby Hammerberg, who's just coming back from double labrum surgery, has been able to be in a few practices recently. She's been great for the spirit of the group and the energy of the group. She's really been a big part of everything that we've done this whole time. She's helped a lot with warming up the goalie and just bringing great energy. And then your daughter, Annie Price, our junior on our team, has been the only experienced defender that we have back. I mean, our other two Ds are from the club team. And so I think she's done a good job of, just showing what it means to be a Princeton lacrosse player and how we communicate on defense and, helping other people with what our defensive systems and philosophies are.
And let's talk about the sophomores next. It's a tough choice that these kids had to make of whether to stay enrolled and not stay enrolled. I could tell you firsthand how difficult it was for Annie to try to figure out what move to make. And, she's an engineer. So a lot of that factored into it, the idea of trying to, have your education be continuous. Let's talk about the sophomores now who decided to come back, and their career so far has consisted of five games as their freshman year, and then it got canceled. Yeah. Just talk a little bit about where they are. There were a number of them who were off to strong starts in their career. And, in a non-COVID world, your team this year would have been senior dominated. There might not have been a lot of minutes to go around for some other players, but just talk about some of the kids from that class who've impressed you.
Yeah, well, to be honest, we don't have a lot of sophomore returners back. Meg Curran has been back with us. She's an attacker on our team, and it's been fun to see her grow and develop. She's a really shifty kind of a player, and I think she's really grown in confidence this year. I think all these kids have grown in confidence. They can't sit back and just allow other people to take the lead. They have to lead on the field, and they're the ones who are getting it done. And it's been fun to see her growth. I think she really has made the most of this experience. And I think she's going to come back feeling much better about her level of play when she returns to campus next spring. And then Catherine McIntyre, our draw specialist, has been kind of in and out. So she's been with us a little bit, but not as much as we might've hoped. I think she's going to, like everybody else who hasn't been around too much this spring, just really get a lot of work in this summer and come back ready to go.
And then talk about the freshman class that's come in. Usually you talk about freshmen and they come to campus in the fall and they get to go through fall lacrosse and they get to meet their teammates and they get to acclimate themselves academically and socially and everything else. This is a group that wasn't on campus in the fall. So their introduction to their teammates and to the entire experience was done remotely. And now here they are. What's that been like? And what's that group? Because I know there's some strong players there too.
Yeah. It's a really great group. And to be honest, I think those kids are thriving. They were so happy to be here. I mean, imagine kind of losing your senior year and then being in your parents', home for your first semester. So they were so excited to be here and have been just doing awesome. There's no question that they have elevated the level of play that we've had this year, and they're learning so much. They've been sponges, and as coaches, it's been great to have so much time with them and just teach them the fundamentals as we like them executed at Princeton. Those kids are really going to be better for this experience. I have no doubt about it. And they include what I have no doubt will be some of the best players to wear uniforms at Princeton. So we're really excited about that class as a whole, both the five that we have now and the two who chose to take gap years and will be coming in with next year's freshman class. But they're great personalities and great athletes, and they've risen the level of the play tremendously.
We're talking with Princeton head women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor, and we'll be back with more of the Chris Saylor Show right after this break.
Peacock Inn and the Perch at Peacock Inn. Princeton's only fine dining restaurant and luxury boutique hotel features menus inspired by our area's hardworking farmers and by the myriad possibilities of seasonality, where each meal is a celebration of community-driven produce and thoughtfully sourced ingredients. Visit them in the heart of Princeton at 20 Bayard Lane or online at peacockinn.com.
Our friends at First Bank pride themselves on being a true community bank. They know the importance of businesses to their communities. When times became tough, First Bank jumped in to help. They helped many local businesses get PPP loans when big banks couldn't come through and contributed donations to organizations dedicated to helping our communities. You want your bank to be there for you when you need it, and First Bank employees are always ready to lend a helping hand. So I encourage you to give them a call at 609-587-3111 or visit their branch in Lawrenceville, just a short drive away from Princeton's campus. First Bank is an equal opportunity lender and member FDIC.
Market Fair, located on Route 1 in Princeton, New Jersey, understands that life can be stressful and different families have different needs. That is why Market Fair is the leading source for every element of today's fulfilling lifestyle with products and services for health and wellness, fashion and beauty, dining, and the home and life. Life can be stressful. Your shopping shouldn't be. Curbside pickup and delivery options also available for a contactless, safe, simple, and stress-free shopping experience. For more information, visit us at marketfairshops.com.
Back here on the Chris Saylor Show, Jerry Price, joined by Princeton head women's lacrosse coach Chris Saylor, ran through some of the returning players and the freshmen who've come in. You would not have been able to run drills, practices, any kind of thing if you hadn't gotten reinforcements from the club team. And that has to be quite unique for you in your career, but also you must love that, you know, they must love the opportunity that they're getting, and you must love what they're bringing to practice every day.
Yeah, absolutely. If it weren't for, we had six players come in from the club team or as freshmen, walk-ons who joined us for the spring. Unfortunately, one got injured early on, but has been showing up every single day, which is phenomenal. But I think it's been great for both parties. I mean, we wouldn't have been able to progress much beyond a 3v3, probably realistically, maybe a 4v4, were it not for those kids. And for them, I think it's just been great to get a real taste of what it's like to be a Princeton lacrosse player, to be able to get out of their rooms and come to practice every day and really get to know and connect with a new set of women who they can now call their friends at Princeton. I know they're going to be following us, you know, for the rest of their time as Tigers, but we've been grateful to have them. And I think they've added a lot of fun to the group, a lot of personality to the group. And we're just incredibly grateful.
So let's shift away a bit from the on-field stuff and talk about a few other things. And one of the things is an on-field thing. That's not exactly an on-field thing. It's a next to the field thing, which is the brand new video board at 52. And it obviously was just recently installed, hasn't been used for games yet. It looks beautiful. And just talk a little bit about the video board addition to 50 to Sherrod Field.
It's amazing. I mean, as soon as you walk into that complex, it's up there. And I understand it is the donors wanted it to be the biggest score, the biggest video board in the Ivy League. And it is. And it's really an awesome presence. I can't wait to start using it. We're actually going to have like a culminating event next Friday, which will be our last full team practice. And so we're hoping to get that video board running and do some intros on that for practice that day. But I just think it's going to contribute so much to the player experience and the fan experience and engagement in the game. And it's just really going to put us with the elite level programs, you know, being able to show replays live for the fans and use it to generate excitement. It's really going to elevate the experience.
So another thing I wanted to talk to you about is this week was the 50th anniversary of the first sort of team varsity event in Princeton women's athletics history. The first actual event was in October of 1970. And then in March of 1970, that was two tennis players competing. March of 1971, it was two a swimmer and a diver who competed. But the first time there was actual varsity competition was April 12th, 1971, 50 years ago this week. This year has been the celebration of the 50th anniversary of women's athletics. You have been a part of that for the overwhelming majority of your career. And you have seen Princeton, you've seen women's athletics from the time, you know, if you want to go back to 1971, I'm guessing that you were just about starting out playing. You know, just talk a little bit about what you've seen about the evolution of women's athletics and, you know, at Princeton, but also from your own experiences. And as a young girl who was competing outside of Philadelphia, one of the things I found, I'm writing this book about the first 50 years of women's athletics at Princeton. I found that A lot of the early women were lucky to be able to compete based solely on where they lived, and they had access to teams and to sports. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, some of those things.
Yeah, I mean, I was one of those women. I just happened to grow up in an area close to Westchester and Ursinus colleges, and those were, in my sports, field hockey and lacrosse, the top two programs in the country that produced a lot of physical education majors who went out into, you know, Chester County and Delaware County, Montgomery County, outside of Philadelphia, and really coached the middle school and high school teams. And so, you know, we had coaches who were great players who would take us to watch the U.S. team play when they would play locally and take us to watch Westchester and Ursinus games. And so really fueled our passion for the sports. And, you know, in field hockey, I was able to start participating in inter-school competition in the fifth grade. And then we started in junior high with lacrosse in seventh grade. And that was really unusual in that day and age. In the early 70s, I talked to so many women my age and even younger who just didn't have the opportunities that we had to play sports. But sports were always a big part of my youth. Both, you know, I played just about anything that you can imagine, whether organized or not. But it's, you know, it's just been fantastic to see the growth in the games and the respect that women's sports have earned and coming to fruition, and the opportunities that women are having to, you know, play at the college level and to compete on the highest stages. Then there's no comparison to the way the game used to be played and the way the game is now. I mean, just the athleticism of the athletes, their training regimens. It's pretty incredible to watch. But I think the things that still stay the same are, you know, the emphasis on the relationships and the life lessons that you learn through sports, the friendships that you make through sports. I think that's been the same, whether, you know, you were a player in the 70s or you're a player now in the 2020s.
I think Princeton has been very fortunate through these 50 years to have had such great coaches for its women's teams. And, you know, if you go back to, you know, you started in the 1980s, and that was a time when a lot of really great coaches came on board, and we got a chance to talk to a bunch of them for the book. But, you know, what's your takeaway? Like, what do you remember about when you were a young coach just starting out? And what's the one thing you wish somebody had told you that nobody knew to tell you at the time that would have come in handy to know when you were just starting out?
You know, that's a hard question to answer, Jerry. I will say what I knew was basically nothing. I mean, I got this job with almost no college experience and really just flew by the seat of my pants and, you know, relied on some of the other women coaches, whether, you know, I came in still working with Betty Logan, who had formerly been the head coach. She became my assistant, and Beth Bosman came on board. And, you know, I learned a lot just working with her and other coaches who became assistants or other coaches within the department. You know, I really had to grow. I don't think I came at it with a whole sense of a philosophy and a way to develop culture and all of these intentional practices that coaches, even young coaches, have now. I don't think I had back then. You know, I was just really teaching the game and trying to grow a team and make tough competitors. And, you know, now I just approach things very, very differently. And I think I've learned so much. I think the coaching profession has grown so much, and we have, you know, just so many more resources with the internet and just, you know, all the books that are written and articles that come out these days. So, you know, I wish I had had more work under different mentors. I got a head coach job when I was 26. I had been, you know, coaching in high school, my own program for 3 years before that. And then 1 year each at Penn and UMass when I had other jobs, but I was also like a part-time lacrosse and field hockey coach. So it wasn't my main role at either school. So I really had to kind of learn as I went along. I wish I had the opportunity to be mentored and work for different head coaches over longer times and grow in that way. I think it's awesome now that assistants, many stay assistants for a number of years and really get a chance to hone their philosophies and their approaches, learn what works and doesn't work. They're a lot less trial and error, I think, than I was when I came into coaching and just trying to do things as best I could.
Yeah. One of the coaches I spoke to for the book was Cindy Cohen, who is also from outside. Well, she's from Northeast Philadelphia. Yeah. And, you know, she tells a story similar to yours. But one thing that was really funny is she said that when she started out in coaching at the College of New Jersey, which was Trenton State College at the time, mm-hmm. her starting salary was $500, and that she stayed for 3 years and her salary went from 500 to 1,000 to 1,700. So she said in 3 years, she tripled her salary. But, you know, I know you, Cindy was the softball coach for a long time. I know you're very fond of Cindy. I'm very fond of Cindy. It was just, you know, it just spoke a little bit about, you know, where people had to start and where women's athletics were at the time. And, you know, like you said, the growth has been tremendous and it's been great to see.
I mean, clearly there are still battles that need to be fought. I mean, we're not at full gender equity. I don't think
you could look at the most recent NCAA men's and women's basketball tournaments for that.
Exactly. So it's not as if, you know, we've reached the promised land. We've definitely made a lot of strides, but there's still work left to be done and still fights left to be fought for women's athletics. But clearly the trajectory has been upward and towards increased opportunities for women and just incredible athleticism and of the student athletes that we get to coach.
Now, speaking of the student athletes that you got to coach, I spoke to Kim Simons I spoke to a lot of people, but I spoke to Kim. And one of the things that's really fascinating to me is she talked about the 1994 NCAA championship that she won as a player for you. And then the 2002 NCAA championship game in which she was the Georgetown head coach and you defeated Georgetown in that game. And what I didn't realize is the year before that they had lost a heartbreaking game to Maryland in the finals. But it was just a lot of fun to sort of go back and talk to Kim and Rachel Becker and others about their experiences and, you know, and those years. But what stands out to you most about, let's just talk about 1994 for right now. We've talked about 02 and 03 before, but talk about 1994. You know, you came off of your own brutal loss in 93, and it was not easy. You had to beat that team, Virginia, and Maryland, who had beaten you a couple of, you know, like 14 days earlier in the regular season.
I think what really stands out about that team is how they weren't afraid to put it all out there. You know, they created these t-shirts, the captains did, before the beginning of the season, that said 1992, Final Four, 1993, you know, runners up, 1994, .. And on the back, it said, you know, the time has come. So, you know, they knew what they wanted. They knew what they were going after. We spent 6 weeks of that preseason. Preseason used to be 6 weeks long, inside a Jadwin A level on the indoor track on that hard surface, moving these rubber mats every day for practice. You know, we had adversity, our fields, there were ice storms, we couldn't get out on the fields, but, you know, those kids were so driven. They would battle so hard in practice, you know, they loved each other to death, but when you put them on the field, they were going after it. You know, they just had that. And Kim led it in that way. I think of Kim and Liz Fagan and, you know, all those guys, they gave it, Amory, they gave it all they had every day. Aaron O'Neill, I mean, just go through the group, but they weren't going to let anything stand in their way. And they knew that. And then they went about and achieved it. It's really easy to say we're going to win, but you got to back that up with work. You got to back that up with what you do on the field. And those kids did.
So lastly, I do want to mention one thing about 2002. When I was talking to Rachel Becker, she said, you must have heard the Chuck E. Cheese story by now. And I had never heard the Chuck E. Cheese story.
Really? No way.
Nobody had ever told me that, but that was a great story.
It was. You want me to tell you the Chuck
E. Cheese story? I would like for you to tell the Chuck E. Cheese
story. Okay. So in 02, we lost our first game to Georgetown in overtime, and they ended up being the team that we beat in the finals. But I think our next game was Lafayette, and we might have been losing at halftime or something. And we ended up winning. But clearly it was not a great game. And I think after Georgetown, I had said to the kids, you know, it's okay. You know, we played a great game. Did you think we were going to win every game? And they're like, well, yes, we thought we were going to win every game. I'm like, you know, it's okay. We'll get where we want to go. But after Lafayette, I think we're all like, wow, you know, we've got to we've got to get ourselves in gear. This team has so much potential. And I think I probably told them that every position was up for grabs and, you know, we were going to have tryouts again or something along those lines. And then the next day we told them to show up at the fields, bring their running shoes, and they might want to bring their cars because we were going to be out there late. And I knew some of them had night classes. And so they get to the field and we're like, we're going to Chuck E. Cheese, you know? And so we went to Chuck E. Cheese and had pizza and played all those fun games and just, you know,
and didn't lose again.
And we didn't lose again. There you go. The rest of the year. So sometimes we, you just need to take the pulse and see what the team needs. And I don't know whose idea that was on the staff. It was one of our ideas, but it was a great idea. And it really did just kind of take the tension, I think, off and just allowed them to, you know, have fun. And from that point on, we had pretty smooth sailing.
Well, Chris, thanks for being with us here today. It was great to catch up. I miss doing these each week. I wish we were in the middle of the season being able to, or late in the season being able to do them. But, you know, it's been an interesting year, and it's been very interesting to hear you talk about the kids in the program now and what they're doing and how it's coming along. And hopefully between now and the end of the semester, it's able to continue to improve. And, you know, hopefully we come back next year and it's back to normal.
I really hope so, Jerry, counting on it.
So, Chris, once again, thank you for being here. For Princeton Head Women's Lacrosse Coach Chris Saylor, Jerry Price, thank you for being with us here on The Chris Saylor Show. And thank you for your continued support of Princeton Women's Lacrosse.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.